Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Welcome back to another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. I'm your host, John Eads, and I am pumped you're here. Every single week, we work hard to bring you discussions to not only give you tips and tricks and best practices that help you on your leadership journey, but also discussions that provoke some deep thought. And this week is absolutely no different, as we have leadership expert John Mertz from Thin Difference on the show. As John would tell you, he's the son of a farmer, which means he was raised to value hard work and the results of such dedication. But it also means that he recognizes the power of connectedness and community. He truly understands that the small seeds planted today will grow into the harvest that sustains us in the future. He's also the author of Activate Leadership and maintains the blog Thin Difference, which is a forum dedicated to empowering millennials to be better leaders, build stronger teams, and create richer lives. In our discussion, we cover some tough topics, such as why purpose is so important in leadership, and maybe my favorite, which I never thought of, why leaders must take vacations. And lastly, we touched on why mindfulness needs to be more than just a buzzword in our professional environments. So put on your thinking cap, because you're going to need it for this interesting conversation with the one and only John Mertz.
Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft, an organization focused on teaching modern professionals how to add value to their organization and the world. Their Leadership Library subscription comes with access to 6 online programs, 25 micro-learning courses, member-only webinars, and personal coaching sessions. They have a special offer for podcast listeners only at learnloft.com/special. Well, John, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, John. Look forward to the conversation.
You might not remember this, but as I was moving into my leadership journey and thinking about developing leadership content and helping modern professionals become better leaders, I reached out to you because your blog and your book had made a big impact on me. So I want to start today by saying thank you. I probably wouldn't be here today without your work over the last few years.
Well, that's deeply grateful for that. I remember, I think you connected with me through LinkedIn and messaged me, and I remember having a phone call and really enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better, but also some of the good works that you're doing.
Well, the blog that got me really started was Thin Difference, which is a blog that you maintain and run all the time. And then certainly you've written the book Activate Leadership. Let's start right there with the subline of the blog is leaders connected by purpose. Mm-hmm. Why is purpose so important in leadership?
For a number of reasons, first for personal development or leadership development, understanding what our individual purpose is within an organization or within our community, I think is very important to keep centered both through the good times and bad times. A lot of people talk about, kind of recentering when bad times happen. But to me, maybe the overlooked or an equally important part is when things are really going well, making sure that you're still leading on purpose or understand your purpose and how you're living that out and leading with that as you go. So that's one area. The second area, I think, is really if you can't communicate to your team or to your organization what the purpose of the business is and what their role, what their purpose is within that business, then I think you'll start to lose a lot of engagement within the organization, and politics may creep in because there isn't a clear purpose of the work that's being done as well as the role of the business within their community.
Now, politics and organizations, that doesn't happen, John. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's right.
Where does your personal purpose for leadership come from? Tell us a little bit about your journey in discovering why leadership was so important to you and why you've written about it and now written books about it and are stirring over what to do next with it.
Yeah, it's been, if I really, I guess, think back about it, you know, my early career actually was in politics. So I was a political science major and worked in a political campaign in Washington, D.C. for about 7.5 years. And so I got to see kind of up close to a certain degree kind of leadership and how leaders brought, you know, rallied around two sides of a problem, but in the end kind of came together and solved that. And so I think that kind of set the early stage maybe for my interest in leadership, and especially in reading as far as history and various types of leaders. And then I think here more recently, it's actually started by writing and social media. So about, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when I started the practice of writing about these topics and engaging with a bigger community through social media circles, it really started to kind of almost recenter me to a certain degree on the importance of leadership and what that means and how maybe we're losing sight of our way and our development of leaders. And that's not going to be good, obviously, for the future generations if we don't kind of recenter or figure out how we're developing leaders in a better way.
Why is developing leaders so important?
Well, for a number of reasons. I think, you know, especially this past year and a half, or and more than that, but, you know, really over the last 2 decades, we've seen a lot of gaps kind of grow, whether it's wage gaps or engagement gaps or, you know, leadership gaps within organizations. And if we don't produce the right or create or craft, whatever word, verb you want to use, the right types of leaders, we're not going to ever close those gaps. And if we don't close those gaps, there's always going to be a certain amount of unrest, a large part of unengagement. I mean, obviously, in the surveys that have been done, what is it, 30% or less are engaged in an organization. So if we don't create leaders that are more mindful, more conscious, more connected in purpose in their organizations, we're not going to see those gaps begin to close.
And I think, have you seen any examples in your life or your career, both either from an organization standpoint, of what happens when those gaps close?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's more stories maybe when they aren't, when they're, the gaps are wider. But
well, yeah, you could tell either one. You know, the reason why I asked the question, John, is, you know, some people say, well, why does it really matter that people are engaged at work? Or why does it really matter if we're developing our leadership pipeline? And you know, what stories, either good or bad, come to mind? Why would you say that that's important?
Yeah, I think on the widening gap side of things, I think when some of the older leaders in particular, and it's not just I'm not stereotyping just older leaders, because younger leaders are equally in danger of this, but if they have a fixed mindset, so, you know, we've always done it this way, we're always going to do it this way, even though they may send a signal that they're open to new ideas, they're really not. I think that just discourages, especially the young generation coming up, that their voice or their ideas aren't being heard, or they're not getting a chance to test or pursue maybe a different, better way of doing things. So I think that's one way. Another way, I think, is, you know, some of the stereotypes that have happened, and it's, you know, generational ones are the easy ones, especially with the current generation of millennials. There's been a lot of stereotyping, whether it's job hopping or entitled, or, you know, the list is way too long and mostly inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And when a business leader thinks, oh, they're just being a millennial, I mean, that just creates another barrier, another gap. And so, you know, somehow we've got to figure out how to be more inclusive, I guess, but also more importantly, more growth mind oriented on, you know, again, there's a focus of the business. There's a purpose of the business. There's a purpose of the work that needs to be done. Keeping centered in that, but then giving some leeway for new ideas or better ways to be tested or tried in the pursuit of that purpose is where those gaps are beginning to will begin to close. And so I think, you know, the organizations that have greater clarity around their purpose and the clarity of the roles that various individuals play within that, or teams play within that, then I think that's where you see them making a lot more progress and a lot, you know, probably, you know, to some degree, the best sign of the health of organizations is looking into the eyes of the people that work there. Are the eyes bright and excited, or are they kind of worn out and, you know, kind of shut down?
If an organization doesn't have a purpose, right? How would you coach a CEO or executive management team to develop one?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, you know, this may be, you know, kind of out of the ordinary, but I would say go take a day hike out in nature to clear your mind and reflect on who you are, but, you know, more importantly in this case, who your business is. And there is a purpose in the business, and, you know, you need to really think that through. There's a company here in Dallas, I just recently got to know them, I think it's called Blue Dolphin. You know, they sell, you know, paper products, essentially, and that type of thing. You would think, well, what kind of purpose could that organization have? You know, but as you talk to their CEO, you know, what they've kind of uncovered or what they've determined as part of their purpose is how can they be offer sustainable products. So it's the green element is really the purpose of the organization. And then they've even taken that a further step by becoming a benefit corporation. So, you know, that sustainability, that green environmental kind of flair is now more embedded within the organization and checked on, held accountable, you know, through the B Corp certification process. And so I think no matter your business, it's really just, you know, going a little bit deeper into really what is the product or service you're providing? What role does that play within other people's lives, or what role can it play in other people's lives that buy your product or service? And then really centering around that and figuring out how you can make that more central to everything that you do, and as well as build your teams around that as well.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant example. I have a mentor of mine that he liked to use the analogy of going out to the mountain. he says, you know, once a quarter or twice a year, every leader, particularly on the executive side, should take a day to go out to the mountain or sit underneath the bridge and really think about the business's purpose and what's most important in not only the current day but in the future. And so he liked to call that going off to the mountain. So take a couple days a year to go do that. And that the example of Blue Dolphin is just a fantastic one, and it goes to show you that, you know, you don't, it doesn't really matter the products and services you sell, right? I mean, when the focus is on a greater purpose than yourself, more than money, great things can be accomplished. I think it's an awesome example. You touched also on this millennial generation, and I think a lot of it has probably died down to some degree, the stereotype, mostly probably because we have another generation that's coming into the workforce now. and people are kind of have dealt with the fact that this millennial generation might be a little bit different. What are some of the things or advice that you would give to a millennial or a modern professional as they move now into leadership positions?
Yeah, I think the number one thing that I would encourage millennial leaders to do, or any new young leader to do, is really to sit down and think about what is, a couple of things. One is, what is the storyline that they want to build within their life? And there's obviously different elements of that: family life, community life, business life, and think about the characters that they would want in their story and what type of story arc would be ideal that they would like to see develop over time. So that's one part. Second part would be, you know, based on that, what are really your core beliefs? What are the things that you're never going to sacrifice, again, in either good times or bad times? That these are your core values that are going to, you know, keep you as a trusted leader, keep you, you know, whatever the case may be, these are the values you're never going to sacrifice no matter what happens. And then the third thing I'm a big proponent of is figuring out what your leadership philosophy is. And the way I view leadership philosophy is, it's kind of your theory of leading, or your practice of how you're going to begin to live out that storyline and how you're going to put your values into practice. So it's really the how you're going to do it. And figuring out what philosophy you're going to lead on and live on, then needs to be revisited maybe every year as well as part of that, to, philosophy, I think, can adjust based on the experiences that you have and based on what you've learned. You know, what are the tweaks to your philosophy as you go? So I really, would start out encouraging new leaders to, think through those three elements and begin to try to write those down and revisit at least the philosophy on an annual basis and apply those lessons learned and tweak your philosophy as you go.
What I think is so interesting about that, John, is it's an internal practice. Maybe something you do with a mentor, maybe something you do on your own or with a spouse, or it takes some real intentionality to do what you just suggested. And so often I feel like my generation, again, I'm 33, so I'm right on the cutoff of the older side of it, but I feel so often this generation that I'm in, 20 to 33, doesn't take the time to be still, right? To be introspective, to be, right, to really plan. I mean, what you're really talking about is planning. And I think there's such a lesson there for not only this generation, but for really for any generation is, how often are you reflecting on what you want your life to be in an intentional way?
Yeah. And I think I definitely agree that, being still is a challenge in with the current generation, as well as even with the older ones, as we're getting more, connected in with our devices and those kinds of things as well. But, I am encouraged that I think with what, mindfulness is, seems to be, hopefully more than just a popular trend or something that's trendy, that it's really a practice that more and more leaders across the generations are trying to figure out. I mean, 3-4 years ago, I went to a conference called Wisdom 2.0 out in San Francisco. And when I went, 3 or 4 years ago, it was, I think it was around 700 people were at the conference. I went again earlier this year after, not going for, several years in a row. And then it was over 2,000. It was like 2,500 people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it kind of shows the strength of that movement. And I think, and it's not just millennials. I mean, you go back to Bill George, former CEO of Medtronic. He's written and has practiced mindfulness at Medtronic. He's teaching it or very involved in it at Harvard. He's written about it, and True North is maybe a way that some of that comes together. But it's more than that. I mean, here in Dallas, we have a Center for Brain Health, and mindfulness is definitely one of the areas of research and practices that they're seeing as not only important from an individual standpoint, but from an organizational standpoint. And companies like Aetna, an insurance company, is taking those practices and developing employment programs around it. And to their credit, not only are they doing it, to help their employees, but they're also trying to measure the results of it so that they can try to encourage other businesses to adopt similar practices. So having said all that, I mean, it's kind of, to your point of, you've got to take those moments to be still, and mindfulness is a way to kind of create those moments or carve out those moments to be still.
What responsibility does a leader have to pass that down to his or her people?
Oh, big example. Responsibility, because it's like it or not, I guess leaders set examples, right? And hopefully they set good examples. And so if they can demonstrate ways to be more fully aware and help others be more other aware as well as self-aware, that is a huge example and responsibility that leaders need to take.
I know it's a really interesting subject. I wrestle with that a lot, right? Certainly I understand the example that I show to my team matters. Mm-hmm. And I think any leader, whether they like it or not, they're watched all the time by their people. I mean, it's almost like a parent, right? I mean, right, whether you know it or not, your 4 or 5-year-old is watching what you do, what you say, how you react.
Right.
And I think it's the same in the professional world. What we do as leaders matter, and people do watch and they do see. And so you brought up an interesting point here about the responsibility of a leader to be mindful to then pass that on to their people. Now, I want to go one other place, one further place. What responsibility do organizations have to develop either leaders or just a more mindful culture? Or is it the same?
I think it's really the same. I mean, because, you know, the, you know, what is an organization? You know, it's a group of people, and there's, and so, you know, having the, you know, setting the right tenor for that organization of what's going to make people want to work at that organization or continue to work at that organization, you know, matters. And, you know, part of it is the exciting work as far as the product or services that are being developed and offered, and the customer feedback and interaction and the, all the stakeholders that are involved in that. But to keep that organization fresh and healthy, you know, the leaders need to demonstrate fresh and healthy, you know, attributes and practices. And so, you know, I think, you know, that, you know, again, I definitely agree that, you know, parenting leader, there's, you know, a lot of similarities that it's, you know, don't hear what I say, but watch what I do, because that's really what's going to resonate more. And so I think there is a certain responsibility. You know, nobody's perfect. So, you know, leaders are imperfect by nature because we're human. But you can take on certain practices, whether it's exercising or taking a vacation. You know, I think leaders that don't take a vacation are setting a horrible example for the organization. You know, plus they're sending a message that I can't really trust you guys to be left alone. So I always have to be here.
Right.
I mean, what worst example can you set? Even if you don't like taking vacations, just go away for 2 weeks. but you know, I think
I struggle with that a great deal, right? I mean, it's hard to just take time away when you know there's stuff. But I for just the fact that you said that, John, has made me think how important it is. And I just was watching 60 Minutes with Donald Trump this week, and he said, "I just don't see a vacation in the cards. We got a lot of work to do."
Right.
And I think there's a time and a place, obviously, to get down to business and be serious and get the work done that needs to be done, particularly certainly with the President of the United States and not just playing golf every day. But at the same time, you know, what example is a first-line manager or a leader saying to their team if they just never take time off or never take a vacation? I think it's going to create almost a sense of guilt from their people when they want to take some time off.
Well, I think it's even those are obviously all valid points and very important ones. But I think it's even, you know, maybe it even goes to, you know, kind of getting stuck in a fixed mindset. So if you never take a break away and you're never self-reflecting or you're never out in nature or you're not experiencing new things, you know, you're going to become stale as a leader and your organization is going to become stale because of that. You know, it's the old, you know, analogy or whatever, that when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, if you never have any experiences outside your day-to-day work and you never take a break from that and you never get away to go do something else, everything's going to continue to look the same. And so, you know, I think you're doing a disservice to yourself as a leader and you're doing a disservice to your organization by not taking those breaks and experiencing something new that may spark something that, you know, takes your organization up another notch that you never would have expected before.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating point. I want to go another place that it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, and that is vulnerability at work. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a good friend last weekend, and he talked about how some of the best leaders do an amazing job of having their team be, as a collective group, vulnerable, and how it starts with the leader being vulnerable and then creating some practices or some procedures or processes to help encourage that vulnerability over, you know, the long haul. The example he gave was that, you know, once a week they bring in this chair that sits in the middle of the room and a different person every week gets to sit in that chair and just talk about what's going on in their life. Both inside of work and outside of work, how they're feeling, you know, things going on at home. And his point was, in order for a leader to do that, the team has to be open to vulnerability. What's your initial reaction to, or how important is being vulnerable in the workplace?
I think it's interesting. I think it's definitely important to be open as much as you can be. You know, I think there's, especially as, you know, if you're a CEO or vice president or, you know, whatever, you know, a leadership role you may hold, you know, there's, you know, some kind of balance, I guess, between being completely vulnerable or partially vulnerable, maybe. But I think, you know, to me, I think the more important or an important added element that for a leader to do is to get to know their team members at a deeper level. To you know, sometimes I think we, you know, just set our expectations based on who they are within, you know, the 8 hours or within the walls of the organization. And the reality is, you know, everybody is trying to deal with a lot of other issues outside of work, you know, family life. It could be a sick parent. It could be, you know, a child that's giving you challenges. It could be something that's happening in your, you know, in your neighborhood. And I think understanding or having a conversation about what else is going on in their lives that may be impacting, you know, their work or their thoughts, I think it's important to know, because then you can begin to work together a little bit of, well, you know, maybe we can shift when, you know, when you work, or go take a day off, or go, you know, figure out how to structure the maybe the day or a week or a month a little bit differently to be able to handle those ordinary life or extraordinary life things that happen without, you know, becoming, you know, disgruntled within work and that thing, because your mind and other things are kind of scattered across what other elements are happening. So I think, you know, I guess kind of to sum maybe that up is that I think, you know, I think it's definitely okay for a leader to, and should be a practice, is to try to have a little bit deeper conversation, not being intrusive, obviously, on people's personal lives, but, you know, at least having a conversation about, well, what else is going on, and being more aware of those other things that are encroaching on their heart and mind that may be impacting them at work as well.
Yeah, it's a tough subject, I know, because you have this HR part, you have this HR thing too, right?
Right.
But I really do feel like if the you've kind of hit a good point there, and so I think there's some things in my heart and in other people's heart where, you know, just the idea of being more vulnerable in the workplace and bringing more of your true mm-hmm. self to work will help you not only connect deeper with your people, but I think it'll also help your people enjoy, you know, being around you more, and vice versa.
Right.
So, you know, if that's on people's hearts or minds, I think, you know, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think you brought up some good points. You know, you've been around the leadership development space, you've been to conferences, you've written books, you've just been a real student of leadership. Who are some of the leaders, you know, either in that space or outside of those spaces that you really look up to or you think have modeled it really well?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's always a hard one too, I think. I mean, I think, you know, Howard Schultz, I guess, of Starbucks, to me, sets a great example where he's willing to, you know, kind of maybe to the last point, be vulnerable and on what's happening not only within Starbucks, but within the larger community of, you know, our country or whatever, and trying to start conversations or try to set an example beyond just running a company. And so I think, you know, how he plays within the corporate world as well as a larger community, I think is a great example. You know, that's the thing, you know, not to get off on a tangent or anything, but I think that's one thing that's really even more so has hit home for me over the last couple years, is that, you know, business really is a force for good. So, you know, obviously products and services are still core to, in, you know, creating a profit, and all those things are very important, but they can really drive change. They can drive change on how they treat people within the organization, and they can drive change in their community. And I think you see that happening with leaders like Howard Schultz and like Mark Bonhoff of Salesforce.com, where they're not, you know, just sitting on the sidelines and running their business, that they are doing that, but at the same time, they're trying to be a force for good and in their communities, in a broader conversation that not only is it important for their business potentially, but more importantly, you know, they've got a large employee base. And so the issues that communities or states are wrestling with, those are their workers as well. And so I think there's the leaders that are seeing kind of a broader responsibility of more than just profit, and having that blend of a purpose and a little bit of activism within that. I think those are the leaders that I'm really intrigued with and watching a lot more closely.
Well, those are two good examples. And I think, you know, you could go on for days, really. You know, there's been so many impactful men and women over the years that have either, you know, challenged your thinking or expanded your thinking, or that you look to make an example of. So those are two awesome examples. Let's end on some fun stuff. What's one of my favorite questions is, what's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
That is an interesting question and a tough one. You know, I think my sense would be it's harder to lead at home, because, you know, I don't know why it is, I guess, but, you know, I guess, you know, it's, you know, I guess at work, you know, if you don't like a situation or don't like the people, you can always just leave. And I guess to do that in family too, but that's not generally a healthy thing to do. And so I think, you know, I think family forces you in a good way to, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, just that, you know, that heart and mind connection, you know, so you love your family, you know, that they're not going to be just like you, and that's a good thing. So you got to figure out how you, you know, especially with your kids, you know, how you can create an environment that they can learn and that they have some freedom to pursue their interests, you know, but, you know, when they are crossing some bounds, how do you, you know, gently bring them back in. And I think the other thing that's always is challenging is that, you know, you're, you know, with your kids at least through 18 until they're off to college and stuff, and there's a big transition that happens between when they're 1 year old and when they're 13 years old.
Right.
And you know, you begin to sense your parenting shift from, you know, when they're younger, you can tell them what to do and they generally listen, and as they get older, you can tell them what to do and they generally don't listen. So you've got to figure out how you, as a parent, you kind of, you know, begin a transition from more telling to more listening and also coaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge shift for a parent to make, is to, how do you be a coach in their lives? Because you can't tell them everything to do, but you can try to guide them, kind of get them to think maybe about things that they're not thinking about. And so you begin to feel your parenting shift, and making that shift is tough at times. And I think a lot of that, obviously there's a lot of analogies you can play in that back to the organization too, but, you know, I think, you know, the family life forces you to a certain degree to really feel those changes and try to understand them and know that if you don't shift in some of how your relationships change over time, you have a danger of alienating, you know, your kids or your spouse or whatever. So there's always that adaptive, you know, element that is challenging as a family and as a parent.
Well, there's no doubt it's a difficult balance, and nine times out of 10, the answer is at home, which I find really interesting. but I, you know, we really appreciate you coming on, John. You're just fantastic insight. The blog is thindifference.com. I think you can get the book on the website as well, Activate Leadership, Aspen Truce to Empower Millennial Leaders. What's next for John Mertz?
Well, that's a good question. I'm in the process of figuring out my chapter 3, so I've been thinking a lot more about social enterprise, about how to get involved a little bit more in the university space, teaching or otherwise, and definitely have kind of starting to poke around on ideas on really kind of focusing on that word activate and what that really means, not only in leadership, but in community and in business. And so that's a lot of reading and writing that I'm doing and continue to think through, and who knows, maybe there'll be another book that comes out at the end.
Well, good. So Activate Leadership, Aspen Truths to Empower Millennial Leaders, thendifference.com. John Mertz, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, John, and keep doing the good work you're doing in developing leaders.
We'll do our best.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It's a real pleasure and honor to bring you stories to help you perform better at work and at home. It would mean a great deal to us if you'd leave a rating and review wherever you listen to the podcast, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Overcast. We get a chance to look at every single one of them, and it helps our exposure reach more people. Again, if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean a great deal if you'd share it. You can always mention at John G. Eads or any future guests you think we should have on the show. So until next time, be a great leader at home and at work.